Each week, nearly a dozen movies are released theatrically. 40 films a month, more than 400 a year. That's a plethora of cinema. Too much cinema. You'd have to be an addict to see all that. But don't fret. We've got you covered. This is Cinematics.
Hey everyone, what's up? It's a new week of Cinematics. This is Cinematics episode 236. We have a whole bunch of new movies to share with you guys. Hopefully, one of these will be gems. Our weekly mission statement is to actually bring some added value as far as cinema goes. It's fine when we're slagging on movies and saying movies not to watch, but I think for me, I don't know about Bruce and Eric, I prefer it when we can actually find some really good movies from the lot to give to our listeners. Eric, what say you? Do you agree with this, that it's more important for us to find gems than to actually attack a movie when it's bad? What do you like to offer the listeners every week on Cinematics, Eric?
I like to offer our listeners Roadhouse.
Don't you get
remake.
Smart with your what? Oh, Roadhouse
the,
remake.
The Roadhouse okay. remake because it's a fantastic movie. Yeah, I don't know what we offer. Gonna, do we offer anything?
Stop. I knew you were gonna go with the jokes. Hopefully, we're gonna get some more somber, sober material. Actually, Eric Holmes is not joking. Roadhouse is actually one of his favorite movies of this year. Yes, I am putting words into his mouth. He said, with a caveat, as he hasn't seen all the movies this year, but possibly Roadhouse might be one, a top 10. Could be, right, Eric? Possibly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, easy. Although this year has been pretty great so far, so it wouldn't surprise me if something bumped it off, but right now it's up there.
Okay. Well, not Bruce, Roadhouse is any movies this year going to knock it off your number one of the year? Is it? I'm not a good listener. Was that your number one?
Any movie's going to knock it off?
Yes. Any movie will knock it off. Any
movies. Just bag. Hundreds of beavers, hundreds of movies. They'll knock it right off the thing there.
Hundreds of beavers. That is a reference to one of the gems we offered and reviewed this year, actually. Hundreds of beavers. I love the name of the movie. Google. Go to one of our previous episodes to check out our review on Hundreds of Beavers. Really wonderful movie. I think it's one of the best films of the year. Thank you, Bruce, for mentioning that. Bruce or Eric, right off the top of your head, without looking at our Google Doc notes, is there a treasure, a really good gem, a cinematic gem this week for us to cover, or is it sort of a barren desert? Bruce?
I wouldn't say it's a desert. It might be a old country buffet, possibly. It's like,
I'm okay with the country buffet. I like chicken fried steak and a little bit of side of gravy, biscuits and gravy. Eric Holmes, do you agree? Is it a country diner, barren diner kind of situation, or is it a desert? Are there some really good movies, though, that surprise?
Yeah, there was one that I just watched today that was definitely interesting. And then there was another one I saw early after we did the show last week that was pretty good and then just kind of stuck with me throughout the week. So
That's a good sign.
It was one of those, the more I'm thinking about it, the more I like it sort of deals.
That's fair. Sometimes those are the best movies. The movies we're covering this week are Kim's Video, I'm Already Annoyed, Baghead, there's a movie. We're going to get to my being annoyed over Kim's Video in a second. We'll see if that's good or bad. Asphalt City, there is Coup de Chance. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's a French movie directed and written by Woody Allen. I'm going to say this. I'm a huge Woody Allen fan. With all the allegations and stuff that's been going on the past couple of decades regarding, it's been hard for me to actually watch and appreciate Allen's films. I'm coming around full circle. I'm saying I'm coming around full circle because now I'm an evil human being. I don't know. That's a whole different situation. I'm going to give a mini review of that Woody Allen movie. Review it as a movie and see maybe some of you might like this movie or not. We'll see. And then the movie that Eric just watched is a film by Quentin Depew or Quentin Depew. How do you pronounce it, Eric Holmes? You've interviewed him a couple of times. How do you pronounce it? Quentin Depew?
Quentin Depew? No, I didn't see his movie. I saw the other one, Yannick.
Yeah, that's his movie.
Quentin Depew. It is? I thought, I just learned something.
Hey, Bruce, is Eric Holmes a movie critic podcaster that does his homework?
No, I'm not. that was a Quentin Depew movie?
To his credit, it does not seem like a Quentin Depew movie.
Oh, wow. Now you're really starting to make sense.
Bruce, did you see it as well?
I've seen like 2/3 of it. I didn't quite finish it before the show started, but I can chime in enough, at least as far as like the tone and the basic, you know, idea of what's going on there. But I can't say how it plays out at the end. So,
Bruce, okay, first of all, that's a lie, because we all know, Eric and I know, that whenever Eric gives a review and when I'm doing a review, Bruce, you're actually not listening to us. You're actually watching movies for the next week. Is that not true? You're actually watching
movies. I'm sorry, movies. What? What was that? I was watching something there.
Okay, so we have a bunch of movies to cover. But before we get to our featured reviews, Sauce, Eric Holmes, any updates on the Sauce?
Yeah, I just made a peaches and cream one. It's got peaches, Irish cream, and Fresno peppers, and it turned out really good. A lot more sweet than I like, but I think it'd probably go good on ice cream.
What are you doing during the week, Eric? Are you in this laboratory mixing different herbs and spices? Do things blow up in your kitchen? How are you making these sauces? Is it legal? Is it a hazard zone, or is it a place of heavenly delights because you're making these wonderful concoctions?
The last one, definitely. Yes,
more importantly, how long until Bella Baxter is sitting behind him in the studio?
Wait, who's Bella Baxter? I didn't get the joke. It's over my head. Bruce, do you get the joke, Eric? I don't know. Who's Bella Baxter?
I've heard the name Bella Baxter.
I apologize, Bruce.
Isn't that the name of the character from Poor Things? Am I wrong?
Oh, I didn't see Poor Things yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen Poor Things. Was that a popular movie that podcasters like me and Eric should have seen?
I don't know. You know, it's nominated for Best Picture and won Best Actress. I mean, I don't know.
Okay, Bruce. Okay. But Bruce is actually the only professional one of the bunch. Eric with the Quentin Dupieux and me. Actually, listeners, do not tell other people that I've not seen Poor Things yet. That may get me in trouble. Now, Eric Holmes, you're going to commandeer a very interesting part of cinematics. This is a new segment. We don't know if it's going to be weekly. Maybe once every 2 weeks. Depends on how we're going to shape it. Eric, what is this new segment over cinematics? I apologize. I'm not rich. I can't do a music bed or a PETA beta middle class film class drop. Maybe who knows? Maybe PETA will concoct something here. But anyways, what is this new segment?
We did director spotlights back in the day. These were like Willem Friedkin, Sidney Lumet. Like, these are directors that we know or that we should know.
Maya Darren.
Maya Darren. This one, I was thinking of like directors that do a bunch of movies or do a bunch of projects that we're all familiar with, but somehow like they're not well known. And I think I got to, and so that's kind of the concept here.
Spotlight these obscure directors who've actually made movies that are not so obscure, actually well known.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea is like, how did you make this, and this, and no one knows your name? So that's kind of the idea. Give flowers where they're due. One of the names we were throwing around for the segment was Famously Anonymous, which I think is apropos for what this is. And we'll do this first one. I'll give a kind of a brief rundown of some of the stuff that they did, and then I'll give you and Bruce a chance to see if you can guess her name. This one might be probably one of the more famous ones I will go for in the future. And of course, if you're listening and you have any ideas of someone that fits this mold, definitely hit me up with them. Don't hit Greg or Bruce up, because they're going to want to guess on who it is, but definitely hit me up about it.
Hamslime@gmail.com.
Hamslime@gmail.com, or just message me on the Facebook or whatever.
Can you believe for the last 2.5 years there have been really reputable publicists in the film and television industry that have got to email hamslime@gmail.com for these interviews? And I think props to Eric for that.
How long before one of your sauces has to be named Hamslime, right?
No one would eat it.
But yes, we would.
Speak for yourself, Bruce. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, maybe that's the name of the sauce, ham slime sauce.
But it's good slime, something like a subtitle. Oh, very interesting. All right, Eric.
Okay, well, anyway, this director was born May 4th, 1956 in Dublin, Ireland. I believe they're a Irish-British filmmaker. They got their start in music videos. Some notable music videos they've done was the Michael Jackson's Billie Jean video, Dire Straits' Money for Nothing video with the 3D animations, and A-ha's Take on Me video, I think is probably one of the most famous videos ever.
That's so amazing. Claire, who actually signs off on the episode, she is our Claire Malaya Miller, my niece, who you hear her at the end of the program. Whenever she calls at night to say hi to her Tito, Greg, she always says, "Take on me." Like, I'm not gonna do the melody thing because that's a copyright thing. But she hums the chorus and actually screams the chorus to "Take on Me" all the time, and it's very, very cute. Sorry, Eric, go ahead.
Well, they've also they worked in the camera department for Ridley Scott's The Duelist and uncredited camera work on Superman, Richard Donner's Superman. They worked on the TV show The Storyteller, specifically the episodes Hans My Hedgehog, Fear Not, and Sap Sarah. If you've seen that show, it's quite good. And his movies include Coneheads and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the first one from 1990.
Wow. Okay. Bruce, do you have any idea? Are there any guesses that you have?
Not off the top of my head. Well, I don't have one.
You're saying Ireland, right? So this person, he or she, was born in Dublin, did you say? That's where that person was born?
Yeah, born in Dublin, Ireland. It says they were Irish-British, so I'm guessing one of their parents is Irish and one of them is British, or perhaps both his parents are British and he was just born in Ireland. I don't know.
Coneheads, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, what other credits does this director have?
Let's see. There's a bunch of TV stuff, Treasure Island, mostly music videos, TV series Around the World in 80 Days. Recently, they did two episodes of the Marlowe Murder Club. I think most people would know this person's name as the director of the Ninja Turtles movie, but I will just go ahead and say his name is Steve Barron.
Steve Barron. Okay. Yep. Very, very good. You didn't let me guess. I was gonna guess.
Oh, my bad. I thought you did.
No, I didn't guess. I was gonna say John Irvin, but that would be wrong. Steve Barron. Okay. So why was Steve Barron your first choice for anonymously famous?
So why was this and then the other one that we'll probably do, I'll just say the name, Michael Lehman, I think was the name that
I came up
we started off with. I was thinking like Hudson Hawk. I'm like, I wonder what the director of Hudson Hawk is doing. And found out that they also directed Heathers and did American Horror Story. I'm like, and then that's kind of what sparked the idea. And then you told me that his name was Michael Lehman. And then the idea of you guys guessing kind of goes against that because we were talking about it in chat. So that wouldn't have worked. But
right. So listeners,
it made me think of like just people that do a bunch of like amazing, like incredibly popular stuff and just no one knows who they are. And when I was going through Steve Barron, I knew that he did Ninja Turtles, but then I decided to look up his IMDb. And I'm like, holy crap, he did that Aha video. Oh, he did the Billie Jean video.
Amazing.
Like going through all the stuff that he was doing, and it was pretty pretty impressive. And then the fact that he worked with Ridley Scott, he worked with Richard Attenborough in A Bridge Too Far, worked on Superman. Like how is someone working like on doing all this amazing stuff and no one knows who he is?
Steve Barron, is that with two R's or just one R? Like
two R's.
Barron. Oh, two R's. Yep. Wow. Okay, Steve Barron.
And also his music video, like he's done a ton of music videos. I just pointed out the ones that are like the videos themselves are like pretty remarkable. But he did like Bryan Adams, Run to You, Heaven, Summer of 69, to Def Leppard, David Bowie, Dolly Parton, Fleetwood Mac, Human League, Joe Jackson, Stepping Out.
Oh, like that song? Gosh, well, that's amazing. Oh, and yeah. Bruce Berkey, you and I of the elderly ilk. You might have remembered this. In 1984, I believe Steve Barron, you can check on your IMDb, Eric Holmes, he directed a movie possibly called Electric Dreams, not Electric Blue, yeah. Electric Dreams, running 95 minutes. Do you remember that, Bruce Berkey?
I remember the name and I vaguely remember it, but I would have to do I had to refresh myself to remember what it was all about.
We try to refresh ourselves before we start the podcast. Okay, Bruce, just wanted to
just don't look.
don't look. Starring Lenny Von Dolan. So these are things that you would remember, you and I, sort of from our Electric Dreams. So what, you know, what would be a really cool thing, Eric, in one of these famously anonymous segments, we actually get the director one of these days if we track down a director for one of these famously anonymous
things. I would not hate that. That would be,
wouldn't that be a cool
thing? I mean, well, also when we're talking about this, like, I think Mark Pellington would probably be a good candidate for something like that. I mean, he was on the show, so obviously he wouldn't work, but just like when you break down like all the stuff that he's done in the past, like, holy crap, like, you know.
But very good.
I would throw out a few just out of the top of my head would be Bob Clark, possibly.
Oh, right.
And Dan O'Bannon.
Okay.
Bob Clark and Dan O'Bannon, I think, are kind of on the cusp because I think enough people know who they are. But I think Bob Clark would almost work because his stuff that's popular is so varied.
Right.
Like, well, he's got a few very popular things and no one knows his name, I bet. Like, most people don't know his name.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And Eric, remember, just the really diehard cinephiles will probably know who, well, the average cinephile will know who Bob Clark is, right? Okay. Yeah. Because Bob Clark I think Bob Clark did Black Christmas, possibly. And then Porky's.
Christmas Story.
No, Christmas Story, right. So, yeah, something like that. So I think he did Porky's as well, but these are really good.
I mean, you're kind of bearing the lead. He did Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. Come on now. Why are you not?
Yeah, the famous movie, Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things.
So this is Eric Holmes' new segment, Famously Anonymous. This was very good. We started off the episode with Steve Barron. And actually, maybe we should put this on we should archive who our Famously Anonymous directors are, because maybe down the line, we might put a couple of their movies in the box, or we might even do a rewind on some of their movies to bring back a little bit more, less, to make them less anonymous and spotlight some of their work, whether we like them or not. Who knows? Maybe one of these days, Bruce and I and Eric, we're going to cover Electric Dreams. Maybe it might be a good movie. We never know.
Electric Dreams is one of those, and I don't know if I'm confusing it with Electric Youth or Electric Blue from that time.
You are.
But I do seem to remember Electric Dreams, but I don't know if I've seen it or if it was just kind of like floating through the ether around that time, and maybe I just caught some of it. I don't know. But, I mean, hey, if we're talking about Steve Barron, maybe I'll check that out because that seems like a good idea.
I have a working deal with Bruce and Eric. I'm going to throw it on the table right now. For next week's Famously Anonymous, I may continue a little bit on the Steve Barron train with a rewind of Electric Dreams. Eric and Bruce, all you need to do is to cover and review each of the 6 or 7 movies we have next week. So 1 for 7, is that okay for you guys, Bruce?
Almost done with one, I think. Or I guess it's being reviewed this week. Never mind.
By the way, we have a lot of movies next week. But let's get to the movies this week. Also, before we end, very good, Eric, on this. I don't know. Next week, are you going to do some research and might have something else?
I'll do it. Okay. I mean, this was fun, kind of just it's weird. It's hard doing it because the idea is that you pick someone that you don't know. So I usually got to pick a movie I know and be like, I don't know who directed that. Let's see that and then go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, or it's also something that maybe someone like Bruce when Bruce went Bob Clark, it's someone he definitely knows, but it might be someone the audience does not know. So that'd be very cool. If you ever have problems on your weekly thing, hit me or Bruce up. I'm sure we have some ideas that we can actually turn the tables, get the tables turned on this quiz.
And again, if you're listening, hit me up. Be like, I got a perfect one for that, Eric. Do it to it.
If you hit up Eric Holmes again, we're only going to promote. We're not promoting our podcast. We're promoting the sauce, and we're promoting hamslime@gmail.com. You must email Eric for some Famously Anonymous picks to spotlight for next week, and we'll make sure we get your name in the podcast. I think that's a really good segment. What say you, Bruce, before we move on to our features? You like it?
I do like it, yeah. I think the idea of what he said, I think, makes a lot of sense. It's like when you really love a movie and you go look up the director and all of a sudden you're like, wait, they made all those things? That experience, I think that's great.
Yeah, I can't wait till we either maybe me or Bruce get in on the thing and give Eric a week off and come up with our Famously Anonymous picks as well. It should be really cool. So thank you, Eric, for that. Let's start off with our first feature. Here's a documentary called Kim's Video. Here's the reason why I think I'm so glad this documentary exists. Number one, I am not as much as I proclaim I'm this physical media person who's always clamoring for the salvaging and keeping and collecting physical media, I feel I don't do a good enough job. Members of our Cinematics Facebook group, they do a better job than me. And I, to be honest, Eric and Bruce, we're watching movies and streaming a lot of times, but there are some diehard physical media collectors, and they are very, I love these people in our Cinematics Facebook group. Shout out to them, and shout out to people who decide to continue to screw up their apartment, home, living space by, I'm going to say this in a beautiful, kind way, polluting their area with so much space of DVDs. I know you guys, I think one of our Cinematics Facebook group members, Pete Pelfrey, if I recall, he had just a garage full of them and he had to get rid of them. It's one of these things that is very important. The people who hoard these discs, it's actually value added because they're keeping a history of our cinema, in my opinion. I don't know how you, Eric, or Bruce feel about that, but I think that's why Kim's video as a documentary works, because the plot line is the story, the true story documentary centers on a filmmaker who goes on a quest to Sicily, in a small town in Sicily, to recover 55,000 movies that are either VHS or DVD. This 55,000 tape, VHS tapes or DVDs, they used to be under the ownership of the owner of this New York store called Kim's Video. The owner is Youngman Kim. You see Youngman Kim in this documentary. You also see interviews with employers and employees of Kim's Video, which is now closed. That, at least the original location, was closed. Some of the former employees include directors Alex Ross Perry. You might know him from that film Her Smell. And then also director Sean Price Williams. These are some of the employees who were part of the Kim's Video experience. Sean Price Williams directed The Sweet East, which I believe Bruce Porky reviewed several months ago. So this is directed by David Redmond and Ashley Sabin. Here's the interesting thing, though, and I've talked about being annoyed. David Redmond injects himself into the story of Kim's Video, and he talks about how, like all three of us, like millions of cinephiles out there, he's been really obsessed with movies, and there's a lot of interstitials with different movies and how he relates to certain films, and he tries to use that personal journey with his own journey in traveling to Sicily and getting these 55,000 tapes. I just wish those sort of movie stuff, it just felt like a very uneven fit. And I felt he put a little bit too much of himself into Kim's Video. I could be wrong. I hope Eric and Bruce disagree with me on this, but I found that to be a little bit annoying. And there is a third act where we figure out how they actually try to get these 55,000 movies that I found a little bit intrusive and annoying. But overall, I think this is a much needed documentary. I had a good time watching it, but there's just some minor complaints regarding Kim's Video. Eric Holmes, your thoughts on this doc?
The story I liked. The narrator, I did not. The narrator seems a bit off. I just kept thinking of Vin Diesel, the movies. Like the overly romanticized idea of what movies mean to you. Like, I'm sure people have that in them, but it seemed bordering on mental illness the way this person feels about movies. Like, just kind of coveting them, like friends. Like, not even the characters in the movies, but like the physical, VHS tapes and DVDs are a tool to, bring the movies to you. They're not the movie. Like, so that part was kind of weird. I don't know how much of this I believe. For instance, there's a part where they break into the place. You know, the door was open. They're with the camera. The person asking them the questions are asking what happened to the guy holding the camera. The first question should be, hey, play that back. I want to see what you guys just were up to. Like that would, and then doing like grand theft across international lines, like that's got to be something, right? Like there's so much in this movie that is on film, and even the way they go about doing it, I who knows? Maybe it's all legit, but I wonder how much of this is documentary and how much of this is kind of made up.
Dramatic effect, Eric? It's more of a dramatic effect kind of thing?
Well, so the dramatic effect stuff is stuff that happens. It's not stuff people are talking about. It's stuff people are doing on camera. And sure. So I wonder if that's actually happening with the cameraman there in real time, documenting it, or if they're like, hey, let's just do this. It'll be a fun, like a Weird Al sort of thing, the Weird Al biopic. I wonder if there's maybe a little bit of that in here. I don't know.
And if there was, Eric, would you dock that documentary a little bit?
No, it was just something I was thinking about. Like, you know, it's just an example of like, you know, even though something's a documentary and presenting itself as real, sometimes you got to step back and look at what you're, you know, consider what you're looking at on the screen and go, are they being completely upfront with me, or am I just being, you know, strung along? And I mean, it could be either way. If it really happened, that's amazing. And the people that they took from are incredibly dumb. If it didn't happen, then good job, I guess. It was, you know, that the whole print the legend sort of thing. Regardless, it was the story was interesting. I think I would rather watch a movie based on this than the documentary as it was.
Good point, Eric. Bruce?
And which would have made more sense, because it's the movies.
Very good. Bruce Berge, me and Eric, did we make some salient points regarding the efficacy of this documentary?
Yes, I had pretty much the same response as well. For example, you talked about him inserting his personality and talked about the movies. He would do things like, you know, like, finding out that Kim's video was gone made me feel really lonely. Lonely like Barton Fink sitting in this hotel, you know, and they would show some clip.
Right.
You'd be doing stuff like that all the time. And it's like, okay, well, we know these movies, but why are you using these as like these weird little asides? I think to me, once again, the core of this is this. The core is, hey, look, there was this really cool giant video store called Kim's Video in New York, and it meant a lot to a lot of people. This is actually a movie where I could have used more talking heads. I would like to have heard more from all the people that it influenced and how it influenced them and how this is a great point in our life.
And why did it go bankrupt?
And having it be having this entire collection languishing in Italy, also interesting. Hey, let's get it back, or let's save it, whatever. That all kind of makes sense. But the intrigue, the mystery, the mob connections. I was about 40% not believing half the crap, just like Eric. I did not buy it, especially the last act. The last act, I was like, yeah, no. They talked to the townspeople, they talked to the sheriff, they talked to whoever, and they basically made an agreement. They made an arrangement.
Got clearance.
Yeah. Oh yeah. None of that stuff happened. I don't believe it. Maybe it did, but I don't believe it.
Too cute?
Way too cute for itself. Okay. Yeah. And it was way less documentary and more like, I'm going to make my own little movie project here and kind of make something out of it. Oh, Rafifi, he mentioned some good movies, sure. But and I also kept thinking the whole time through, it's like, well, there is a really great video store, the best video store in the nation, and it still exists, and it's called Scarecrow Video. It's in Seattle. Look it up anytime. It's better than Kim's ever has been, and it still exists. And it's probably been one of the best that's ever existed in the world. So go visit that, or make a documentary on Scarecrow Video and tell Kim's Video to go have a good time. Yeah, no.
I will say this, though. The fact that the filmmakers had to pay for tickets to Italy over... I'm sure this was shot over a couple of years.
Well, that's what kind of made me wonder, too. Like, he went to Korea, too, right?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, so you know what this seemed like to me? A spoiled, rich, hipster, New York guy decides he's going to make a movie and just gets daddy's money and goes out and has all of his friends wear masks of people. And even that, the people they pick as masks, sure, some of them recognizable, but they also pick masks of people that are, ooh, you don't know who they are? Well, you're not as cool as me. I'm dropping a name. It's like dropping names with masks. No.
So why did they have to bring it to New York anyway? Why couldn't they just open up a store in
Italy? They're bringing it back home. Back home, man.
It's New York. They got plenty.
No, you don't get the story. It's like, you know, it's... Yeah.
Well, you know, I really like a part of where this documentary was going regarding keeping physical media. And maybe I'm ascribing a little bit too much to Kim's Video. I just wish that this doc didn't get too cute for itself. And there are very frustrating moments for me watching it. I really enjoyed getting to know young man Kim, what he was all about. Should have been more of him. There should have been more of so many different... Would have loved to have known a little bit more about the town. That was what the pieces we got were interesting. I just felt this documentary was a bit flawed. That said, this is a mild recommend for me. Kim's Video, which will be in New York and LA April 5th, expands April 12th. I am giving it 3 stars for Kim's Video, just based on the beauty of just talking about physical media and I really like certain parts of this doc. Bruce?
I'm with Eric. I would rather see a dramatic version of this, but also I would just have it be like Clerks, but it would be Kim's video and just how it was in the day and just the denizens coming in out of it, day in the life. I give this documentary 2 stars.
2 stars from Bruce Berkey. Eric Holmes?
I was mostly annoyed, much like Walter was with Donnie in The Big Lebowski.
So, oh, Eric, I love that.
I'll kind of split the difference because, I'll go more with Greg because, I did like Kim. I did like the story, even though I didn't believe any of it. But now I'm back down to. We'll go 2.5. I think this would make a good. I think this story would make a good like fictional movie, and don't even call it Kim's video. Like call it something else, but like use elements of it, so you could go even further with it. I think it would be like a fun heist movie, kind of like the movie Heist, which also had a heist in it.
You mean like 2.5, like 6 less than 8.5? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes. Yes.
Oh man, Kim's video, man. This Kim's video, it really could have been a contender, kind of like On the Waterfront.
I'm so sorry. But yeah, that, I think the documentary has like enough in it to keep you. Oh wow, that's a cool thing. Or maybe you're like us. No, I don't believe any of this. But you know, it's interesting enough. But I worry about the narrator / director, I guess, which I guess is the same person.
Yeah, there's 2 directors. There's Ashley, who's not even doesn't feature herself in the movie. Ashley Sabin and Dave Brennan.
Do you think they're just playing a character?
No, I think this was actually earnest from David. But I just thought it was just
like a lot of this seems to be they seem to be like kind of referencing other movies. And there's some especially newer indie movies where the main characters talk all monotone like this. This is a normal style of character speak in a lot of movies. Maybe the director's doing something like if they're doing that, then I completely apologize about the possibly mental illness thing. But yeah, I did not care for that, but documentary's got enough good stuff in it, I guess.
Yeah, it does. It does have enough good stuff. Just to put a quick button, 20 seconds in, directors, they interview a resident of that area about Kim's video. And the woman says, yeah, I remember Kim's video. I used to read movies here all the time. That was very interesting. If they actually got some more on the street people talking, the neighbors, how has the neighborhood changed, what's going on, and just kept their stuff out of the, it could have been so much better. Again, Kim's video, 2.5 from Eric, 2 stars from Bruce. By the way, Bruce is like leveling movies right now with just this, you know, you need to bring in some kind of big cinematic gavel and just levy your rating.
2 stars. Oh, bang.
You bang. Yeah.
Well, get ready. Some more gavels are coming.
Uh-oh. Okay. And I'm giving it 3 stars. Now, speaking of more gavels that are coming, Eric Holmes, have some boat drinks if you want on this segment. Me and Bruce, we watch this movie called Baghead. It is streaming on Friday, April 5th on Shudder. Also, I read in the press release, it will be available on AMC Plus as well. Baghead centers on this woman named Iris. Following the death of her dad, she inherits his pub. His pub is in this warehouse, big warehouse-looking thing, building in Berlin. She needs money. And she hardly knew her dad. Her dad is played by Peter Mullen. Thing is, here's a trick. She wants to actually, she inherits the bar. There's a solicitor who says, well, just give us the bar. We're going to sell it for you and we're going to give you the money. She needs the money so much that she decides to keep the bar. The reason why she keeps the bar is there is a man, a stranger, played by Jeremy Irvine, and he tells her that he wants to go down to the basement to see this person, this creature known as Baghead at the pub's basement. And Baghead, this creature, has the power to actually, well, for about 2 minutes, you can talk to Baghead because that Baghead will transform itself into a dead person. So for 2 minutes, you can actually talk to a dead loved one. Okay, but the price is you only have those 120 seconds. If you go over those 2 minutes, Baghead becomes really powerful. Your life may be in danger. Obviously, Iris, played by Freya Allen, she doesn't believe in this stuff, but when the Jeremy Irvine character, that stranger, gives her about $4,000. She's saying, oh, well, really cool. She starts to humor him, and then she realizes Baghead does exist. Unfolds the story behind Baghead. Also, Ruby Barker plays Iris's best friend, Katie. She's also a big part of the narrative. Really interesting story. Really interesting creature. The creature that will let you talk with your dead loved ones. Could have been a very tense film. Scary one. I was not tense. I was not scared. Freya Allen, I've not seen The Witcher. She seems like a really good leading person talent. Good performances. The look of the movie, good. The idea of the movie, good. The overall execution, though, I felt there was a lot lacking. Really a lot lacking. And towards the end of the movie, where these type of films, you want some kind of knockout punch or something really interesting, it just whimpers. And I was really disappointed. I wanted it to like it more. It's directed by Alberto Corredor. Yeah, this is probably one of my more disappointing films of this year because I really wanted to get into the fun of Baghead. It could have been so many different things. Bruce, am I wrong in this assessment?
No, I don't think you are wrong in this assessment. A couple things about it. Number one, a movie called Talk to Me came out last year, which had similar restrictions around talking to the dead and a time limit and all this stuff. And it was fresh and weird and cool and scary and all these kind of things that you want from a movie like this. And it had a great idea. This has a similar idea, but okay, there's a couple things that I think this movie does wrong. Number one, I understand it's a rule kind of movie, like Gremlins famously is a rule movie, right? Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do this. If you do these things, things will happen. This movie tries to be one of those movies too. Like, don't go into her zone beyond that, you know, hole in the wall. Don't let her out of the basement. You know, don't talk for more than 2 minutes. But of course, they don't take these seriously at all. Like, they just break those things all the time. Another thing that annoyed me in this movie was people keep talking longer than 2 minutes, and they keep taking to heart the things that are said after the 2 minutes, when you've been specifically told that after 2 minutes, it's basically Baghead talking to you. It's like if you said to someone, you're going to be able to talk to your loved one for 2 minutes, but once 2 minutes is up, it's going to be the devil talking to you. Once it's the devil, why would you be paying attention to what they're saying? You know, they're trying to use you and they're trying to get in your head. So you stop listening at that point. But the big, big, big problem for me is the mystery. There is no mystery in this movie. This movie should be creepy, unknown dread at the beginning. Maybe we don't even quite know what's going on down there, and we slowly uncover the rules and the secrets, and maybe she has to research the history and find out, and slowly she discovers what's happening. But like within, I don't know, what, 10 minutes? Here's the rules. Here's what's down there. Here's what it looks like. I'm here to pay money. Let's do this. And then after that, you're like, okay, well, someone's going to break the rules and bad things are going to happen. You kind of know that. And then the stuff that happens is all kind of PG-13 feeling to me. Like, nothing is too scary. Nothing's too crazy. Lots of digital fire. You know, nothing just seems that dangerous. So it was, like you said, a whimper. I think that was a great description. Like, the whole movie is kind of a whimper. Like, it should have been this creepy, dreadful, mysterious kind of thing that slowly builds the dread until it just, you know, crescendos in all-out mayhem. And no, it doesn't do anything like that.
Well, I haven't seen Talk to Me, but even if they were similar, which they are, it still could have worked because there are so many things that could have gone right with this movie. But it's it's a really interesting premise. The actors are fine. The overall look of the movie, it mm-hmm. looks good, but it's just all of those in-between measures.
I do doubt the bar, though. Is that supposed to still be open? It looks like it's supposed to be open. No one's ever walking into that bar.
What are those other levels? That is the biggest bar building I've ever seen in my life, and it's only secluded into that one area. They don't even explore any of that stuff. Yeah. It's just a bar and the basement. And also a room. But oh, I'm complaining so much because I just saw so much potential.
Yes.
I saw some really bad reviews and I go, look, I have a feeling this could be good. As usual in my life, I was wrong. So anyways,
It had the setup for, like, this could be your classic gothic story, right? Locked rooms, you inherit the spooky old place, all that kind of stuff. It just had to be tweaked a little bit and with more mystery and stuff.
Tweaked a little bit with more mystery. There is something that happens in the third act where you can potentially go, whoa, right? There's something that actually happens to one of the characters and you go, oh, I kind of didn't see that come. Oh, well, what, as opposed, like if it was a real thing, you'd be like, care. Oh, wow. Right? And, but when that happens, I go, okay, yeah. So that happened. Yeah. Right? Whatever. So anyways, Baghead for me, all that said, I can't believe I'm going to say this.
Look, don't say four stars or I'm out.
I'll just write the four now.
I'm giving it five. So no, all of these complaints. How dare you, Eric? You're going to give it four stars. I was going to say four stars. I was going to say three stars, but I'm going to honestly say this is one of those movies that I'm warning you. I still had a good enough time in this movie. If it actually, Bruce, you disagree with me on this. If it actually even had a better ending as opposed to that whimper, I would have given it three stars, but there were so many missed opportunities in this movie, and it frustrates me because it could have been classic, close to it. 2.5 stars.
Ouch.
Yeah. What about you, Bruce?
Two stars.
Keep in mind, that's a Greg 2.5 stars. That's it. 2.5 from Bruce is like a high recommend almost.
You know, my mom said she loves listening to the podcast because she says, I like Eric because he's really funny. And I'm thinking, Mom, what about me and Bruce? Are we pallbearers?
I'm not funny. I know that. So.
Bruce, you and I are the two horsemen of the apocalypse, right? Two horsemen at the fore, two horsemen of the apocalypse. But yes, Eric, you are, thank you for bringing the jokes. But this is not a joke. Again, 2 stars for Bruce.
I mean, from the reviews, it sounds like it was.
Yeah, 2.5 stars from me. This got so bad that this is inside baseball stuff for you guys. Eric said he did not get the screening link to Baghead. And I said, no, the links were sent. But I think Bruce got a link. I got a link. But I was not even, I was like, Eric, watch something else. And Eric's going to cover what he watched, but not worth the time. I'm glad Bruce and I saw it. Took a bullet. And you, speaking of taking the bullet, Bruce and Eric will take the bullet from me right now for Asphalt City, which Eric saw last week. Bruce, you recently saw it. And it stars Ty Sheridan, Sean Penn's in it. And the only thing, I still have the link. The reason I didn't know, I don't know if you guys knew this, it's directed by Jean-Stéphane Sauvier. Do you know what this person directed before that, Eric or Bruce? Did you check?
No.
I know they did A Prayer Before Dying.
A Prayer Before Dawn. Yeah,
Prayer Before Dawn or Dying, I forget.
A Prayer Before Dying.
A Prayer Before Dawn.
Yeah, A Prayer Before Dying. I think you're referencing, because you and I are the same age, we're on the same generation, Bruce. A Prayer Before Dying, I think that's actually a movie starring Bob Hoskins and Mickey Rourke. A Prayer Before Dawn stars Joe Cole in that prison camp in Thailand. Yes. Boxing thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. So good that you saw that, Bruce. And yeah, so I don't know if that kind of really cool energy is in Asphalt City. I don't know, whoever wants to talk about the plot, who, you guys go take the plot and do the review.
I can't, because there's not much of a plot really. This movie is break it down. Have you seen Bringing Out the Dead? This is the sequel to Bringing Out the Dead. Like, Sean Penn's essentially playing Nick Cage's character. Ty Sheridan is whoever. Ty Sheridan, I guess, is the main character. But Sean Penn's like the de facto Nick Cage character in this movie. But yeah, it just follows around a couple EMTs in a bunch of different situations that they find themselves in.
Is it a lock time, like 24-hour period, or is it spread out?
Okay. No, it's over a couple days or a week or, you know, some undisclosed amount of time. You know, Sean Penn's got his own personal stuff going on. Dogs barking at trees for no reason, for example. He's got his estranged wife or baby mama or whoever, and daughter. And Ty Sheridan's kind of the character that just kind of watches it all go down. Yeah, you have Michael Pitt show up in a bit. He's, you know, kind of like similar to Bringing Out the Dead, where Nick Cage would go on EMT runs with different people. So does Ty Sheridan. Mostly it's him and Sean Penn, but he'll come up. Mike Tyson is in this, is the chief. Kylie Reese is in it. Don't know that we can say what she does in this, but she's in it. Could have seen more of her, but what we got, I was happy with. I would say if you dig Bringing Out the Dead, watch Asphalt City, because it's just more of that, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Bruce?
Yeah, I'm slightly positive on this, but I guess, and it's been a long time since I've seen Bringing Out the Dead, so, but my memory of it is it was a lot more stylish, and there was some weirdness in there, and I remember it being a little fever dreamy, and I remember it having some ups and downs, and I feel like this is down and downer. This one is very quote gritty, which it's done, it's filmed really well. It really, you feel like you're in it. It feels really kind of authentic and stuff, but also there's something about it, like you know, you see this kind of day in the life and you kind of want to see a day in the life, like being a cop, being a EMT, being a soldier, being anyone that's kind of down in these trenches. There's a lot of like BS stuff they go out on, but it seems like every call that I know we're only seeing the calls they want to show us, but every call they go on is like something dour and just horrible. Every person they come to is like, you know, tattooed and drugged out of their mind, or part of a gang, or fighting dogs, or something even worse, which I'm not going to mention. There's a few other really, really bad things. And, you know, it's kind of got Sean Penn as the grizzled old, you know, professional. He's the old lifer, right? You know, you got the scared young rookie, essentially. It's, you know, we've seen this kind of thing before. And some of the stuff works really well, but some of the stuff was kind of a little bit like on the nose too. Like, for example, the Ty Sheridan character, they make a point of showing his Angel Wings jacket that he wears. How many times? 10, 20 times in this movie we see him from behind walking so you can see his shoulders, and then he has angel wings on his jacket. It's like, okay, I wonder what that means. I wonder what the symbolism is there.
I think it's a new character's dead, and then their arms are stretched out like Jesus Christ. Yeah. They're like, that's been done to death. We're going to do the angel wings now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I really tip both ways of this movie. On one side, I just love the kind of the real reality, real feeling like you're in it kind of style. You really feel like you're in the streets, tons of location stuff. Everything is just, you're there, and I love that. And kind of just the end of those movies where you're like, end of watch, you know, those kind of movies where you feel like you're
great movie, like
in the war of some sort, you know, that stuff works really great. But there's a level of oppressiveness here, which I think I get why it's there, but I just wanted to see a little more. And they kind of try to turn that at the very end a little bit, but it's a little bit too little too late for me overall. But I think I still lean overall positive. And there's some great performances too. This is the best I've seen Sean Penn in quite a while. I haven't, granted, seen him that much lately, but he's committed to it, and he's not just phoning it in at all. He's really working here.
Yeah. A couple notes. You did mention, if you don't like watching bad things happen to dogs early on, a dog shows up, just go to the bathroom, go for a smoke and come back, because the horrible thing happens to a dog. And I know for a fact that's a sticking point for a lot of people. It'll be projected. So you'll watch the movie, you'll say, oh, this is the part Eric and Bruce was talking about. I think I'll just walk away for about 5 minutes and come back, and then you'll be fine.
Warning, it comes back though. Remember, that's the thing about that that's a little bit sneaky, because there's an original scene where something bad happens to a dog, but then it comes back. So you have to almost miss about, I don't know, 15 minutes to miss both parts.
Perhaps. Wow. But yeah, whenever you see a dog, just walk away.
Just walk away. All right, Eric Holmes, you did not walk away from this movie. I think you have some positive stuff. What is your rating or final thoughts on Asphalt?
Actually, I like this because, again, I love bringing out the dead, and this was just more of that, and I like this as well. I think, you know what? I think I'll go 5 stars on this one. Another fun thing is, I guess, before they made this, apparently Nicolas Cage was one of the people that could have played Sean Penn's part, so that it would have been bringing out the dead, colon, Asphalt City, who knows?
Eric, before we get to Bruce's rating on this, just a quick question on your 5-star rating, because I'm interested, because I can't wait to see this movie. Like what Bruce was saying, if this was a viscerally charged thriller, I don't know if it is,
I would probably, I mean, I'm thinking like 4-star range because it just feels like a very energetic, downbeat movie. Might be my cup of tea. For you, what made it from a 4 to a 5-star where it just checked a lot of boxes for you? Why did you give it the highest rating?
Well, again, this is the one that I saw early in the week that that never left my head. So it kept staying in there. I like all the individual runs they go on, even though Bruce is 1,000% right. They're all dour. And I really like where the ending went. Well,
okay.
I liked where the ending.
Very good.
I appreciated where the ending went. We'll say. Okay. I don't know if liking it is the proper term, but yeah, this is just kind of like one of those. Yeah, it was much better than what I thought it was going to be, and the more I thought about it, like the more it's kind of burrowing in my craw.
Okay, Bruce. Let's pretend it's Christmas time and you're giving out presents, like good ratings to movies. I'm opening the present right now for Asphalt City. What? How many stars am I seeing in the box?
It is a pair of socks. 3 socks, 3 stars.
Socks with coal in it. Well, 3 stars is good, Bruce. So it's a mild recommend for you, meaning it was watchable, right? It was a watch.
Yeah, it just needed that extra narrative character spark for me. Other than just, I kind of got to the point where I was like, I get it. Being an EMT sucks. It's terrible. Can we do something else now? Like, what's happening?
It needed the IB banging scene.
Something.
Lord, please help. I'll be banging.
Oh, boy. I can't wait to see this Asphalt City again. It's currently in theaters right now. Bruce and Eric will take a 1-minute siesta because right now, next up is the Woody Allen movie, Coup de Chance. And it centers on a couple, well-to-do couple, Fanny and Jean. Fanny is, well, they're a really wonderful couple. Everything seems fine. But the problem is one day she actually bumps into this guy named Allen. Yeah. And Alan is a former classmate, high school classmate of hers and he actually meets her on the streets of Paris and he tells her that he's always had a crush on her. And from that instant, Fanny's starting to wonder, wow, what would my life be like if Alan actually confessed his crush on me way back when? Now, let me just say this. Fanny, she has a pretty good situation. She has a good job. She's not a gallery owner, but she does something in the art galleries, maybe a buyer, or she does auction stuff. But her husband Jean is really rich, so they live in a gorgeous apartment in Paris. They go out every night to fancy restaurants. They do so many cool things together, and their friends are ultra rich. A lot of this movie has them talking to their friends, and it's a running joke how the only thing that these rich friends talk about is where they're going to vacation in the next season or places they've been to. So this is a well-to-do rich drama. The catch is, though, when Fanny starts her situation with Alan, she commits adultery. When she commits adultery, she sees a life with Alan, possibly, and she's wondering if she continues. Should she stay with Jean? Or should she be with this new, her former high school classmate, Alan, who is a struggling writer who is in Paris for a while? So that is the premise of Woody Allen's Coup de Chance. And it's in theaters April 5th and PVOD April 12th. I'm a big Woody Allen fan. Not as big as I was maybe the last several years because maybe I've subconsciously avoided a lot of his movies, but I'm back. I think we did a movie a couple years ago called Rifkin's Festival, I believe. All three of us reviewed it. I was the one, if I recall, who gave it the highest marks. And I think Bruce and Eric were mixed on that movie. Uh-oh. This movie, as much as I like it, what?
I wasn't mixed.
Oh, no, you gave a bad review? You remember giving that? Yeah, you gave it a bad review. I should dig that up, that review. But anyways, Coup de Chance, for me, it's getting really good reviews. I like the drama. I like the comedy. It was a good mix. It sort of reminds me of that movie Match Point he did years back. Does not have the gravitas of Match Point or Husbands and Wives or Hannah and Their Sisters. It's not one of the great Woody Allen films, but it's almost a return to form. I enjoyed watching it. I liked the acting. I liked where it went. And for me, this is just a solid Woody Allen film. For me, it's a straight down the middle 3.5-star movie. 3.5 stars for Coup de Chance. In theaters April 5th on PVOD April 12th. I have not seen the last couple of movies from Woody Allen, but we'll see. I don't know. This should be an interesting film. If listeners, if any of you go see this movie, if you're a Woody Allen fan, tell me what you think of Coup de Chance. Now, finally, there is a movie.
real quick, Greg.
Yeah.
Before we move on, are you okay?
What would happen?
You feeling all right?
What happened? What?
We're one, two, three. This is the fourth movie. You've not given one 4-star review. I'm kind of worried about you.
Well, Eric, you know, we're going to have to talk about that. There's just stuff that's been going on in my life. And I think it's because of Bruce's just dour mood the last several weeks. Making two and a half stars for these movies. I cry after these recordings, okay?
Oh, Greg, I'm giving you hugs across the internet.
Thank you.
It'll be okay. I want 4-star Greg back.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Eric. That was very thoughtful. And Bruce, can you stop the darkness with your ratings? You're just really bringing me and Eric down. I'm not going to cry, okay? Because there's some comedy ahead. Not the comedy here, because this was some serial comic stuff. I'm still a little bit sad about whatever Bruce is so into a movie, but maybe Bruce might be he's two-thirds. I don't know. Maybe, have you seen Yannick twice while we've been recording this podcast, Bruce? I don't know. You're two-thirds of the way of Yannick, but Eric, you have seen Yannick. It's only 60 minutes. What can you tell us about the 60-minute movie written and directed by Quentin Dupieux? It premieres exclusively on Mubi, the streaming service, on April 5th. What say you, Eric?
Well, first of all, like, I had no idea. You said that we're getting a Quentin Dupieux movie. I didn't know it was this. He's got another one coming out. Notre Dame, and Dolly. So I thought it was going to be one of those. I didn't even see that Yannick already came out, or according to IMDb, it was before those. So I missed that. So I thought this was someone else entirely.
Shot it in 6 days, Eric. 6 days he shot it.
Yeah. And this movie is 60 minutes and about 60 minutes and 40 seconds before credits start rolling. So this is like a tight hour. Basically, it's you're watching a play, you know, it's going on. There's seems to be a misunderstanding between a husband and wife, and the wife's friend, who the husband thinks is she's cheating on him with. And the play goes on, and the friend is about to open the refrigerator door and say, no, don't open it. And so it's like kind of a mystery of what's going on in the refrigerator. And then someone in the crowd, because this is a play, someone in the crowd stands up and just says, hey, yeah, this is no good. And the people on stage are like, what? It's like, yeah, you know, I had to get time off work. I work 7 days a week, and I got time off work, and then it's a 15-minute car ride down here, and I'm watching this to, you know, forget about my problems, and this is just not entertaining. I don't like this.
That's awesome.
And the actors are like, what? It's almost like kind of like what we do. Someone puts out a movie, we crap on it. And then, but this is like in real time. Like, what if we do what we do in a theater, or what if Twitter, but in real life? That's kind of funny.
What it is.
And then it kind of gets more absurd as it goes on. Not in like in a Quentin Dupieux way, because like eventually the guy gets kicked out, and then he comes back with a gun, and then he's like, "What are you gonna kill us?" And he's like, "No." Did someone get a laptop? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, let me see that. And he goes up on stage, puts on the table, opens the laptop. He's like, I'm gonna show you that, like, I know nothing about art. I know nothing about writing, but I bet I can write a better play than you can. So he's just sitting there holding them at gunpoint while he sits there, writes a play for him to perform. And it just kind of goes on from there. But yeah, it was pretty entertaining. And
comedy?
Yeah, kind of. It's weird. It's not absurd like Quentin Dupieux's movies, and like a giant bug doesn't come in or anything like that, or doesn't have like a time portal or anything.
But
it's just kind of like a kind of a ridiculous situation in that setting. The weird thing is that situation in that setting is ridiculous, but that situation happens like a lot online. People would be that upfront and, you know, honest, or that much of a hole to someone as long as they remain anonymous when they do it. You know, like in Twitter or social media, just in general. I think it's playing on that whole idea, but yeah, it's a good one, and it's an hour long. which is awesome because, you know, and it's weird because Quentin Dupieux's movies tend to not be that long anyway. And they, so I think he spends a lot of his time just like, since he doesn't have much time with the movies, he just gets right to it almost immediately, whether it's going to be some point he wants to make or it's going to be, you know, he just wants to get right to the weirdness or whatever it is. He just like, you know, they're dense and he gets right to it. And this was pretty good. And the and then finding out it was Quentin Dupieux as we started the show, I believe it's still recorded. You've heard it earlier. I was like, oh, that was okay. That makes a lot of sense. But yeah, this is good stuff. Go check it out.
Bruce, you are only two thirds of the way through it. Do you see Quentin Dupieux a little bit into this? Would you have been surprised if it was someone else, or how are you feeling so far along your watching journey for this film?
I'm enjoying it. Yeah, definitely. I think the aspect of like, I think Quentin Dupieux definitely is like, he has an interesting idea and he plays with the idea in his movie and he kind of explores that particular idea. Usually it's way more absurd or fantastical. So I think that's the part that doesn't quite seem like him. But the general approach of, hey, here's a weird idea. What if this happened? And then let's follow it through. I think that does fit with him. And I was thinking, it was weird. I was thinking as you were talking about the Woody Allen movie, I was like, you know what? We have Quentin Dupieux and we have Woody Allen. It's like you have permission to just watch one director that's an auteur that makes a movie every year, that at least one movie a year that's original and interesting ideas and stuff. And I say just watch Dupieux now. Just watch him for the rest of his career, unless something comes out about him that's equally heinous.
I think with Dupieux, though, to your point, Bruce, he is known among cinephiles and, of course, within the region. I mean, I think internationally he's pretty well known, and especially to diehard cinephiles. I think a lot of people, whether it's what, let's name some of his movies. This Yannick, Rubber, what is the one with the bug one?
Mandibles. Smoking Causes Coughing, Incredible right. But True.
I don't know if you guys agree with me, but I think a lot of people might think his stuff, because they have such a weird premise, they might be inaccessible, but they're pretty accessible and they're fun. They're just fun to watch, right?
And they're get in, get out. They're like usually pretty fast. So
yeah. They're amusing.
I mean, Smoking Causes Coughing, that's basically an anthology movie. Mm-hmm. So if you don't like what you're watching, you know, just wait a few minutes and then I'll go to the next weird story.
Well, Bruce so far is digging Yannick. I am going to watch it as well, and we will do a rewind on Yannick. Again, it premieres exclusively on Mubi April 5th, but we will get a full-fledged rating from Eric Holmes. What is your rating on Yannick?
I'm going to go 5 stars on this.
Okay.
Yeah, it was short, simple, really biting commentary, and just watching it, I have never seen that happen in a theater before, but I was like right on board with kind of the whole concept and what was being said about just the idea of criticism in general. Like, what's the line between criticism and just being an a-hole? Right. Apparently not.
Not that much,
not,
right?
Not that thick of a line.
That's very, very fast. Okay, so let's go to recommends right now. We're done with our features. We have Three Body Problem. It's on Netflix. The series is getting a lot of mixed reviews. There are some people who actually are defending and really loving Three Body Problem. Bruce, commandeer the segment. Eric, I know you've actually seen the series as well, so would love to hear what you guys think and enlighten me if I should actually, and our listeners most importantly, should actually give Three Body Problem a shot. Bruce.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a recommend for everybody for sure. I think it's by the guys, I think, that produced Game of Thrones, if I'm correct. It's based on a series of books, I think a trilogy of books. So now the question is whether they'll make the rest of them. It's hard to say. So some of the people who love the books, of course, are like, it's not as good as the books and all that kind of stuff. Well, I haven't read the books, so I'm only going off of this. And I think it's an interesting mix of kind of accessible sci-fi series stuff going on, and kind of some really interesting, hard, speculative sci-fi, which I appreciate that stuff. One of the biggest barriers to entry. Okay, so the basic concept at the beginning is that you've got a bunch of scientists around the world, like the top scientists in whatever their field are committing suicide. And it's kind of a mystery. Why are they doing this? And there are both government agencies trying to figure it out and just other scientists trying to figure it out. And within that, we meet a group of scientists that are pretty young, that all know each other, and how they kind of come in to discover what is going on with that mystery. You also have some flashbacks to a woman who's now an older scientist in the Western world, but she started out under communist China, and you kind of see how that affected her and how that affects what's happening in this story. And then in the first three episodes, there's a lot of emphasis on this kind of virtual reality game that's been created by, we don't know, aliens, maybe it's a government agency trying to mind control people. We don't know. It's this weird, like a helmet that's got, you know, the ability to put you in this weird VR game. And I thought at first it's like, oh, we're gonna have this VR game going all the way through, and that's gonna be kind of the show. And I would have been disappointed if that was the case, but it goes other places. And I really enjoyed it. I think it really deals with some interesting problems, especially when it comes to the use of science to solve problems or to be used by government agencies. There's some stuff with that. And I did mention episode 5, and episode 5 is quite amazing. All I can say is I'm just waiting for the Panama Canal Lego play kit for that. I don't think it's ever going to happen, but it would be amazing. Anyway, I'd be curious to hear what Eric thinks. I think it's pretty good, pretty promising. It definitely leaves loose ends that you would want to have tightened up a bit with other seasons. So that is a drawback to it, if because you may never get them. So, but I enjoyed myself quite a bit in this movie.
Bruce, if you never get these episodes, if you never get another season, was it a waste of time for you then? Because these loose threads will not be tied up.
I don't think so, because some of the threads were tied up, and I did appreciate stakes. I always appreciate in a series like this where there are actual stakes. Main characters may or may not die or have terrible things happen to them. It isn't just, you know, they have that plot armor. There's definitely not plot armor for a lot of the characters in this. So I appreciated that as well. And this is also one of those kind of series, if you like trying to solve all the weird little things, there's tons of posts out there. People like trying to figure out what different things mean and all that kind of stuff, if you want to do that.
Okay, before we get to Eric's review, why do you think there is that barrier to entry? Why is it getting mixed reviews? It seems that you're going to give it a favorable, if not very good review. But why do you think there's that?
Well, there's always the book versus the series. That's that thing. I think there's also, this is kind of a weird hybrid. So I think people who want kind of more like just basic sci-fi, like a Star Trek-y kind of sci-fi, will probably find it too dark and too kind
heady?
Of... heady, yeah, kind of weird. And then people who want really hard sci-fi, like, I don't know, Primer level or something, might find it a little too like accessible and kind of crowd pleasing. So I think that mix kind of is one of those things where it doesn't please everybody, you know, a little bit. And I think to me, that's a sign of something that's doing something kind of interesting, because it's kind of willing to piss off both groups and just be what it is. So I appreciate that.
No, it sounds like a very singular series. Eric, do you concur with Bruce regarding your, I don't know, I think you've seen the entire series, your thoughts?
No, oh, no. I just skipped right to episode 5 because that's what Bruce recommended. Oh. So I was lost through most of it. right, I mean, I knew that there was like some alien thing, or maybe there's aliens, maybe there's not. There was definitely that kind of question. The big part was that entire scene on that boat was pretty rad.
But a thing happens.
I guess I was expecting like something a bit more emotional because Bruce recommended this. So I wasn't expecting like a big action set piece. I'm like, well, that can't be what Bruce was excited about. Like, there's got to be something else. And I don't know what that other thing else was. But also, I spent like the whole first half of the episode trying to figure out what was going on, because I jumped right into, you know, this is not the show's fault. This is mine for jumping into episode 5 instead of starting from the beginning. But I spent like half the episode trying to catch up and go, I don't know what they're talking about. Who's that? And, you know, I was kind of curious, Bruce, like what kind of blew your mind about episode 5, or was it that whole set piece on the boat?
It was mostly that set piece. And I think probably part of it is just how hard they decided to go with that. Like, how they didn't really, I mean, other than showing some things directly in your face, it went all the way with that scene. They've committed to it. But also in the context of the series, like what it means, because there's characters there that essentially feel like that they have been used for evil purposes. There's characters doing things that are supposedly the good guys that are doing some pretty terrible stuff.
Okay.
Just kind of the basic idea of, and I'm just leaving it kind of vague for purposely, the idea of like, hey, we want to get something. Well, instead of figuring out a way to get that, let's just use an atom bomb. And that's not what happens in this, but it's the equivalent of that. Let's just use an atom bomb to get that piece of paper down there. kind of what they're doing.
So in short, don't do what I did. Don't skip right to episode 5, like build up.
I mean, no, there's 5. Interesting. Well, I think that's interesting that you did that, Eric. Well, does that make you, not like you have time because we have a full slate of stuff next week, but would you ever go back to episode 1 and actually watch the series? Has it given you enough of an appetite to give it a shot possibly?
So like the is it aliens, is it not, kind of probably not, because that kind of leans more towards the
Star Trek-y thing.
Not Star Trek-y thing, conspiracy theory thing. Okay. Leaning more towards maybe the conspiracy theorists are right. Whenever they throw that in the story, I just start rolling my eyes.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's going that way, but it felt like it could be going that way. And
it's not a mystery. I'll put it that way. Okay. You know whether they're there or not.
Very quickly. But I'm just saying, like any TV show or movie or story where they have the conspiracy, like, ooh, the conspiracy theorist was right the whole time. And you'll be talking about Alex Jones later. And maybe that'll inform why I'm so annoyed when they do that in movie. We're not in a place now where we can lend credence to conspiracy theorists. Because people will believe anything, and a lot of relatively sane people believe really insane things to our society's detriment. And I don't think we're in a place where we can be fast and loose with but what if this one's right? You know, let's not play that game. Let's mature as a society first, and then we can start playing with that what if scenario.
Okay, Bruce, three body problem, your rating. I think you're actually feeling your review is sort of maybe the series might be, it was really hyped, might be even underrated. I don't know. It might be an underrated series now.
It might be. I mean, I don't really know. I feel like there's a lot of people that like it, but that are like more in the scientific and really hired sci-fi community. So I don't know. I don't have a full temperature on it. Give it a little bit of time. I'll probably go 4 stars in this. It could elevate depending on what they do or don't do in the future. Like it could elevate. I think it's a quality production though.
Okay. So that is it for our recommendations. If Bruce Berkey, you have a choice, kick Alex Jones to next week or go right to the box. You're going to make the executive decision.
Wait, that sounds like the same thing.
You could do Phantom right now, or we could do.
Alex, it's like you're saying, like, you can either quit or get fired.
That's a pretty good. I'm gonna let you decide, Bruce, on that.
We can kick it to next week. It's fine. Okay. The short thing I'll just say about it is, if you hate Alex Jones or you think you've heard too much about him, I think this documentary gives it's as much, if not more, about the people and how the people are destroyed by the Alex Joneses of the world, and it puts real people's faces to the other side of that blowhorn, you know, that bullhorn, that just constant barrage. And I think in our world right now, we only hear the constant barrage and we don't see the people that actually get damaged by that.
I do not want Eric to see this.
Your head might blow up. The entire conversation around Alex Jones, just pro Alex Jones, anti Alex Jones. I don't care. Let's just stop talking about Alex Jones.
Like I said, it's not even so much about him as it is about all those people that got destroyed by him. And then just watching him and how the courts finally were able to do something with it.
Yeah. Okay. I get all that, but just anytime I see Alex Jones come up in conversation, I'm like, I'm going that way. You guys have fun.
Understood. I get that.
All right. Now let's go to a box movie. And again, apologies to Eric and Bruce Berkey for what's in the bleeping box, because what's in the box is, well, it's Phantom of the Paradise, a Brian De Palma film, due to I chalk it up to my lack of movie integrity. I say Brian De Palma is my favorite director. I was not able to rewatch Phantom of the Paradise. Bruce, I'm sure this movie was very important to you. Eric, you've done a rewatch. Eric, take my name off this. I'm not even going to review it. And I feel so ashamed of myself as a human being for not being part of this Phantom of the Paradise discussion. Bruce, lead it.
Lead away.
So Phantom of the Paradise, 1974, Brian De Palma. Boy, this is it's his, I guess you would say, an easy way to describe it is Brian De Palma's version of the Phantom of the Opera as told through the glam glitter era of the 70s. And it's also a strange kind of sub parody of a lot of the stuff that was popular around then too. So you get like these kind of neo fake 50s kind of Sha-na-na kind of bands in there. And you've got like a fake kind of Beach Boys performance in there, a bunch of stuff like that. Crazy production, looks like something that was in the same era as Rocky Horror Picture Show. I think people think of the look, that really glittery, stagey kind of look to it. If you don't know who Paul Williams is, you will by the time you watch this movie. You also have a young Jessica Harper before she, I guess, never really broke it too big in the real world. But in our world, she's pretty big because of Suspiria and because of a couple other things. So
Minority Report years later and...
Yeah, she's been in a tons of things. I mean, for sure. But I think the average person on the street wouldn't have no idea who she is. I don't think I've seen this for about 20 years or so, and it did definitely struck me a little different this time. This time it struck me a little goofier and sillier than I remembered. I remembered it being really like culty and fun and odd before, and I didn't have quite as I was a little more cringe this time watching it a little more
because dated maybe possibly.
It's goofier than I remember. It's like it's not as much of a satire. It is almost like a broad, almost slapsticky parody in a lot of ways. And the slapstick elements kind of, I hadn't remembered it being quite so slapsticky. So some of that, and also I have the album, but I would say if it was this or Rocky Horror Picture Show, I love the music in Rocky Horror Picture Show. The music here is like, it's okay. I know what it's doing. I get it, but it doesn't quite work for me, but a lot of the stuff does work for me. So it's, I would say this is kind of a quintessential for me, 3-star banger. This is if you love the tone of this, the weirdness of this, then you're going to love this movie from front to back. But if you're younger than probably 40 and you go and try to watch this movie now, you'll probably hate it. They'll probably watch this and be like, what is this garbage? They will not. It'll be like watching an old variety show from the 70s. That probably may have no impact on them. That's good.
That's my feeling. Middle class film class crew. They need to they need to cover this movie. If they have not already, because they cover a lot of stuff, it will be interesting to see what they, because they are a generation removed from us. They are way younger than all
three of us, I think. See, sometimes you get the reverse effect, though. Because if that's, for example, like everyone loves Late Night with the Devil. And I think that's because if you're young enough, there's so much camp and weirdness built into it because it's so foreign to you that I think it turns the corner again and becomes great. So it might be, they might like it better than me because I was around at that time. So, but I like it. I like it enough, but I don't love it like I do some of other De Palma stuff.
Okay, so that's 3-star banger for Bruce Berkey. What about you, Eric, on the rewatch of Phantom of the Paradise?
I saw this as the link that gets you from Streets of Fire to Rocky Horror Picture Show. Because that jump's pretty big, but you throw Phantom of the Paradise in the middle there. It's like, all right, it's a little... We're Streets of Fire, but we're getting a little crazier. And then you get from Phantom of the Paradise to Rocky Horror Picture Show, and it's just, street burlesque show at that point. I do like the music a lot more in this than Rocky Horror Picture Show. And I just not a fan of Rocky Horror Picture Show in general.
But you like Paul Williams, man. You like the Paul Williams as a...
Yeah, I like the music in this, okay, Phantom of the Paradise. It's kind of right up my alley. And I didn't think I'd seen this before, but then watching it, there's a bunch of scenes that was like, okay, I remember this from a thing. So I must have seen at least bits and pieces of it or something throughout the time. I think there was one particular part towards the end. I would say the part when they're singing, but that's pretty much the entire movie. But there's a person that gets electrocuted. I thought that was in Streets of Fire. Until I saw Streets of Fire again, like after years later, and I was like, why am I thinking of that? Oh, it was from this. But it's good, campy, silly. The performances by the Juicy
Fruits?
No, Winslow, the Phantom.
Oh, that's
like the right. Facial expressions and eye expressions that come through that cool mask. The story is pretty stupid. but again, this is kind of like, this movie's so over the top that you just kind of roll with. Like, if you can't roll with that, then this is definitely not the movie for you. Yeah. I think three-star bangers, like, right on the money. Yeah, if you're watching either Streets of Fire or Rocky Horror Picture Show, or you're doing a threefer, this would be a good one to go with either one of those, or just do a three-peat of all of them.
One little thing I'll bring in. So I was struck by this time, like, I think the difference for me is between this and Rocky Horror, it's like, this is like all of the drama kids are trying to act like what they think it is to be a weirdo. Whereas I feel like Rocky Horror Picture Show are the actual weirdos trying to make a musical.
I think where I like this one better is, first of all, the Phantom, like, his look, yes. the way his voice does it. I like the music better in this. The setup is, I don't want to say plausible. This is plausible, but I guess more so than Rocky Horror. Like, I think when I saw Rocky, and I should probably just revisit Rocky Horror Picture Show, because the first time I saw it, I was thinking it was just going to be this mind-blowing thing. And I saw it, and I'm like, oh, this is just silly. Like, it didn't land with me.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear people discuss it that are kind of from outside, because I think they work really differently. I know we're going to get into a long discussion of it, but first of all, I would strongly disagree about the music. I think the music is night and day better in Rocky Horror, but that's my personal taste.
I mean, we can agree that Streets of Fire, the music's better than both of them, right?
It might be. Yeah. I might agree with you on that. But also, that has a Meatloaf connection, so we'll go with that.
Oh, so does Streets of Fire. Jim Steinman wrote
that's what
songs.
I mean. That's the Meatloaf connection.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Meatloaf and Rocky Horror.
I think the difference is, too, for me, like, if you look at Rocky Horror Picture Show, it's honestly, it's just a love letter to old horror and sci-fi.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Whereas this, it's more of, it's not a love letter to the Phantom of the Opera as much as it's a kind of a cut down of kind of corporate music culture. So they're doing different things.
You know what's funny about this? One of the main plot points is that while the Phantom is asleep and someone comes in and steals his opus or whatever that was, and they submit, like, they brick wall him in the room.
Yes.
And the following scene, he's just out.
Oh, yeah. He busted through it. Like, he burst through it.
I don't even remember seeing him burst through it. I just remember the guy in the shower, and then he comes in with a knife like in Psycho. it's like they spend all that time
walling him up.
And he just gets out like off camera or something, like it was nothing.
Yeah, a logic is not going to make sense in this movie.
All right, so that's 3-star banger for Brian De Palma's Phantom of the Paradise for Bruce Berkey. And Eric, what is your final rating for this movie?
Oh, yeah, same 3-star banger.
3-star banger for both.
Yeah, if you're in for it, go for it. If not, if you've seen Rocky Horror and it didn't do anything for you, I can't imagine this would either.
A couple of quick just comments before we get to close the show and get to what's in the box. I did put a reel. I don't know if you guys saw this. New Roadhouse better than the original? I put that on.
I saw that.
The answer is yes, but.
I know. The answer is yes.
Eric. It might be. I haven't seen the original. I can watch it still.
We got just two responses. Well, actually, we got three responses, okay? Over on Facebook, on our Cinematics Facebook page, we have our buddy Chad Wilfong putting a GIF or a GIF. What is it? Is it GIF or a GIF? How do you guys pronounce it?
It should be GIF, but people pronounce it GIF.
Actually, it's the reverse. It should be GIF.
But it's GIF, graphical interface.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it should be GIF, but I could be wrong.
Okay, well, GIF is the peanut butter, but that's the argument.
Oh, I love GIF, the peanut butter. Well, I'm going to go with
GIF. We're even arguing over this. Rocky Horror, GIF, what's going on here?
Okay, GIF from here, Chad Wilfong. He has, come at me, bro. Grr, and you have a little sort of a animatronic baby or something trying to hold weights. So Chad Wilfong is saying, come at me, bro, to you, Eric Holmes. We love you. We love you, Chad Wilfong. Over on Facebook.
I'm not gonna come after Chad.
Chad. No, we love Chad. So on
over Roadhouse? Come on.
On Cinematics, we have Bobby 9362. 11 hours ago, he said, I didn't think it was comparable to the original. I think the new one sucked. Okay, so that's that, and then finally,
and that's a very valid and popular opinion that I do not share.
Fair. Different strokes for different folks. Finally, different
courses for different courses.
Right, exactly. And finally, Sean Linhart over at our TikTok. I never put stuff on our TikTok. We have
a TikTok?
Yeah, in cinematic.
Hey, listeners, check out our TikTok over at TikTok.
Over at TikTok. Right. Okay, from Sean Linhart, he says, if they had just called this movie something else, it would have been well received. Trying to connect this to the original is too much of a leap. They have very little in common. Eric, do you agree with that? Maybe if they named it something else.
I mean, the comparisons would have been there regardless if they would have called it something. I get what they're saying, but if it was called something else, they change. Literally, all they would have to do is change the name Dalton to Jake Mellenhall, and then other than that, the only other thing connecting it to Roadhouse is the basic setup.
Okay.
But the fact that it's called The Roadhouse, they have to change the name of the bar.
Yeah. Well, so in Roadhouse, it's called the Double Deuce. It's not even called the Roadhouse. But yeah, they could have renamed the Roadhouse to something else, changed Dalton's name to something else. But the storyline's still there. I think the comparisons would have still been comparisons to the Roadhouse would still be there. But I see their point. If you would have called it something else, they would have compared it favorably or unfavorably to Roadhouse based on what the movie is, as opposed to how does it compare as a remake. So yeah, I get that.
Okay, I'll be putting up some more reels and stuff on our socials over. So follow us on TikTok over at Cinematics. Follow us on Facebook at The Cinematics. Follow us on what else? Oh, join our Cinematics Facebook group. TikTok. And then YouTube, we're over at Cinematics as well. We're trying to get to 1,000 subs. We have around 540-ish right now. Please help us get there. Our mission is to get 1,000 subs. That'd be really cool. Support us here on Apple Podcasts. Rate and review our Cinematics. Thank you so much. We're also on Patreon. And I forgot, Bruce, your Patreon. Patreon, this is what year are you covering? This is your month, Bruce's month?
Oh, yeah. I don't even remember. I have to go back and look, too.
I think it's 1986.
Oh, yeah, I think it was. Yeah. I have so many to choose from. I need to still put up a poll. There's like at least 10 movies that I can imagine doing. So I have to, put up.
Or some of you thinking of. Just give us a little taste of what may or may not be there.
Oh my God. I have to go back and look again what all was on there. I think I want to remember Night of the Creeps might have been one of them.
Okay. Good.
There was a bunch of good ones. There's a bunch of weird stuff that came out that year. So
Too bad Witchboard wasn't released in 1986. That would have been a good choice. Maybe Witchboard. Yeah, I love that. Wasn't Tiny Katane in that one? I remember that.
I believe that's correct.
I remember that as a teenager. So rest in peace, Tiny Katane. But I think I liked that movie on VHS. But 1986.
She was also barely in David Coverdale's Car.
Right. Yes. Here I go again. Is that the music
on
video?
His own?
Right. Gosh, you and I, all those member berries, Bruce Berkey. Well, we're going to get to a member berry because Bruce and I will relive the year 1986. I don't know how old you were, Eric. Maybe you were 5 or 6 then.
I mean, 86. I was 8.
You
9.
Were
8.
You were 9. Okay. And Bruce and I were 30.
I was born in 77. So
yeah, Bruce, right. 77. Bruce, you and I, when we were born,
Me? 65.
Yeah, 65. I was born in 1971. You and I were like, they should just call me and you Methuselah, right? Bruce, when it comes to... Anyways, enough with our age stuff. Okay. 1986, Patreon for this month. $5 catch-all. That's our bonus episode. Before we go, we have What's in the Bleeping Box?
Yes.
What's in the box? Check that box. What's in the bleeping box?
What's in the box?
The lid is off.
No, the lid is finally
off. Take the lid off the box, Bruce.
What we got? What's in the box? Again, do not contact Clam Slam. Contact Bruce Perky at gmail.com. If you have movies you want to put on the box.
2010's Boy by Taika Waititi. I've never seen it, so there you go.
Did you put that yourself yet? Oh boy.
I think I might have. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Yes. All right. Boy, Taika Waititi. I remember we did Hunt for the Wilder People years back. Did I do that with Anderson? I don't know. My memory does not serve me really well these days. But again, Boy for next week. And hopefully I'll jump into that. Are you a Taika Waititi fan, Eric Holmes? Yeah,
probably not.
Not Thor movies.
Like I don't hate the movies I've seen of his, but I've never seen a movie of his where I'm like, yeah.
Jojo Rabbit.
It. No, that didn't do it for me. The Thor movie didn't do it for me.
Yeah, Bruce. Like,
they're not bad. You know, I enjoyed watching them, but they didn't move the needle too much. I'd rather watch Roadhouse.
Bruce, you're a fan? You're...
I'm up and down. Wilder People. I like JoJo. The Thor movies aren't so much. And
okay. Yeah. All right. We'll see. All right. We'll see if Boy meets... Who knows? Maybe Bruce might give some really... I mean, he gave 4 stars to Three Body Problem. Maybe he would give some more really generous stars to Boy next week.
Boy Meets Girl. Waiting for a Star to Fall.
I love that song. Waiting for a Star to Fall. I love that song.
I have to check to see if Steve Barron directed that video too.
Right? Exactly. And then again, what is the name of your segment?
Famously Anonymous. Yeah. If you think of like I would probably reverse engineer it. Think of a movie that you like. Check the director, and if you've never heard of them, see what they've done. And if they've done like a bunch of like one or two or three or whatever cool things, that could be a great candidate, and throw them to me, and then we'll put them on the segment.
Okay, email Eric Holmes. He's very generous when it comes to that really wonderful segment. Email at hamslime.com, hamslime@gmail.com, bruceperky@gmail.com for the weekly What's in the Box picks. Final thoughts, Bruce Perky.
The Webster's Dictionary says you can pronounce it either way, but the creator of the graphic interchange format, Steve Wilhite, said in CompuServe, choosy developers, choose GIF.
Oh, so it's a graphical interface. Got you. Hey, just because you created it doesn't mean you're smart. I'm just saying.
Oh, here we go.
It's like people that create have a name like, my name is Greg. No. It's Dredge.
All right, guys. On that note, here's Claire.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for joining Cinematics.